your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why, like you, he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to continuing coverage in the Suitcase Murder, The Trial of Sarah Boone, from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Case number 2020-CF-2603,
Sarah Boone
versus Sarah Boone,
and
now today's for the record,
we get
from the state.
Dave
Catch-Troy
on behalf of the state.
William J. for the state.
Defense.
James Owens for Sarah Boone.
Tony Henderson for Sarah Boone.
Have a back on behalf, sir.
Ms. Boone, raise your right hand to be sworn, please. Do you swear or affirm the testimony you should give? Shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so love you God.
I do.
Thank you.
Good morning, ma'am. Could you state your name and date of birth for the record for me?
Sarah Boone, 101077.
Ms. Boone is seated at counsel's table, buttressed by her attorneys, wearing a black suit and pink blouse. All members of our jury are present this morning. State, or is there anything we need to address before we bring in our panel?
No, sir.
Defense, anything we need to address?
Yes, Judge, I intend to introduce these two exhibits that have already been stipulated to. One is... You've been walking towards the
ID? Correct.
Okay.
Right now, your ID is AB as in the weight and AC as in
the weight. Defense identification AB, Judge, which is the order dated June 16th of 2019. It's a no contact order. And then identification to AC. And it is a no contact order. June 19th, 2019, and then I'd like to hand publish them to the jury. Okay. And let them look at them on the side, and then I believe we're going to rest our case, but at some point I guess you would excuse the jury because Sarah Boone needs to be questioned about, and there may be additional motions to be addressed at that time.
So yes,
do we want to do that now before we bring the jury in?
I don't have a problem with that. If you want to rest now, subject to those being entered and published, and we can address any motions, the court has reviewed both of the no contact orders.
Okay.
And that way we don't have to do a in and out, and I can colloquy Ms. Boone at that point in time, and we can proceed with the state's rebuttal case.
Okay. So
Subject to those, the introduction of those two exhibits just mentioned, we would be, the defense would be resting our case at that juncture.
Okay, all right. Yes, ma'am. Okay, I've been advised by the courtroom deputy that juror wearing badge 130, seat 10, cannot stay past 5:30 today. So, just be advised. We'll use our time accordingly.
Is that one of the six?
I don't believe so. Give me a moment and I can check. That is an alternate. It's alternate seat 4.
Thank you.
Defense, do you have any motions?
Just out of abundance of caution, I would read new or motion for judgment of acquittal pursuant to defense resting. We'll do that now while the jury is still out. I don't have any additional arguments other than what was made the other day.
Okay, thank you. Any other additional argument, Mr. Jay?
Just that at this point in time, the standard is whether or not a reasonable trier of fact could find the defendant guilty, and there is sufficient evidence for that to be sent to the jury.
Okay, thank you. The court recalls the arguments that were made after the conclusion of the state's case, both from the state and the defense. The court finds that a reasonable juror could make a finding of guilt on the elements of the sole charge in the information beyond and to the exclusion of each and every reasonable doubt. For those reasons, the renewed judgment of acquittal is denied. Ms. Boone, I have a couple of questions to go over with you, ma'am. You've been previously sworn this morning. Your attorney has indicated that all of the evidence and testimony of all witnesses in your case have been presented to the jury, with the exception of the two no-contact orders, pre-marked as AB from June 16, 2019, and the no-contact order of June 19, 2019, pre-marked as AC, which once the jury comes back in, he will enter into evidence and produce them to the jury for their viewing. Are there any witnesses that you wanted to call that your attorney failed to call?
No.
Is there any evidence that you wanted your attorney to present that any of them failed to present?
No.
Are you satisfied with all of your attorneys up and until this point?
Very.
Is there anything that you would like to bring to my attention at this time?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, all right. I did receive the proposed jury instructions this morning. I'll look at them during the lunch hour, and after the state concludes their rebuttal case, we can proceed with addressing those. Mr. Beck, yes, sir.
No, the defense did not receive the red line copies that the court discussed yesterday. I don't know if those were sent or not.
I emailed Ms. Berrios last night. Once we got out of court, I'll send them to everyone this morning. Just give me a moment, and I'll get those out right now. Is there anyone else? The email correspondence that I have is Mr. Owens' email, Ms. Andrews' email, Mr. Cacciatore's email. Is there anyone else that they need to be sent to from the defense side?
We'll pass them around.
Okay. All right. Very good. Can we go ahead and bring in our panel? State.
Yes, Your Honor.
Defense?
Yes.
All right, let's stand and bring in our panel, please. Thank you.
jury's entering.
State, do you recognize our jury?
Yes, Your Honor.
Defense, do you recognize our jury?
Yes, I do.
All right, thank you. Y'all can be seated. Good morning, members of the jury.
Good morning.
Welcome back to 12 Alpha in the Orange County Courthouse. If you could, just raise your hands to confirm that you complied with the court's instructions last night during the break. I thank you. Record will reflect that all jurors have raised their hands. We're going to have a little bit of additional evidence presented by the defense this morning. And then we'll go from there, okay? All right, thank you very much. Mr. Owens, you may proceed, sir.
Judge, at this time, I would move to introduce defense identification exhibit A, B in evidence.
No objection to A, B, or A, C.
What was pre-marked as defense A, B will be received into evidence without objection as defense 19. And if you could just identify AC for the record, sir.
Judge, at this time, I would like to move defense identification AC into evidence.
Hearing no objection from the state, what was pre-marked as defense AC will be received into evidence without objection as defense 20.
And Judge, I would like to publish these to the jury and allow them to take their time and pass these down to...
You may proceed.
The first is Defense Exhibit 19. We'll just review it and pass it down. Document is Defense Exhibit 20.
Thank you.
you, members of the jury.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Owens, any other additional witnesses, evidence, or testimony, sir?
No, sir. On behalf of Sarah Boone, the defense rep.
Thank you. Defense, or state, are you intending on putting on a rebuttal case?
Yes, Your Honor.
You may proceed, sir.
State calls Dr. Tanya Warner.
Doctor, good morning. Could you state and spell your name for the record for us?
My name is Tonya, T-O-N-I-A, Warner,
W-E-R-N-E-R. Right, thank you. You may be seated, ma'am.
Thank you.
Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning.
Where do you work?
I'm employed at Meridian Behavioral Health Care in Gainesville, Florida.
And what services do you render there?
I'm their chief medical officer.
And can you tell the jury what your educational background is?
Yes. So I graduated with an undergraduate degree at the University of South Florida in chemistry. I then attended medical school at American University of the Caribbean. I did a residency in psychiatry at Connecticut Valley Hospital in Connecticut under the auspices of Yale University. I then came back to Florida and did a fellowship 1 year in forensic psychiatry at the University of Florida.
And since your educational background, what have you been doing professionally?
Yes. So I'm a licensed physician in Florida. I am board certified in general psychiatry and forensic psychiatry. I was initially employed on faculty at the University of Florida from 1998. Through 2015. I retired there as the vice chairman of the Department of Psychiatry and the director of the Forensic Institute. I then went to work as the chief medical officer at Meridian Behavioral Health Care, which is a community mental health center.
What is psychiatry?
So psychiatry is the treatment of mental health disorders.
And what is forensic psychiatry?
Forensic psychiatry is the interplay of psychiatry and the law, so anywhere where psychiatry intersects with legal issues.
What is the difference, if any, between a psychiatrist and a psychologist?
So a psychiatrist has gone to medical school, where a psychologist has not.
And as a licensed physician, are you able to prescribe medication?
Yes, I am.
In the course of practicing medicine as a psychiatrist, do psychiatrists prescribe medication to treat mental disorders?
Yes, we do.
And when did you begin your work as a forensic psychiatrist as opposed to working at the faculty at the University of Florida, or was that concurrent?
In 1996 in the state of Connecticut. While I was doing my training at Yale University, I testified for the first time as an expert witness in the state of Connecticut.
And over the course of your career, have you done forensic psychiatric evaluations?
I have.
Approximately how many?
Thousands of times.
And does this include on matters such as competence?
Yes, it does.
And does it, just explain briefly to the jury, what does that mean, legal competence?
So competence is, do they understand the legal process? Do they understand who the different players are in the courtroom, who's on their side, who's not on their side, what they're charged with, what the possible penalties are, what the possible plea options are?
And have you ever done any forensic evaluations about insanity?
I have. I've done sanity at the time of the crime, and also I've been appointed by the governor of the state of Florida to do sanity for execution.
And have you ever been involved in working as a forensic psychiatrist involving the subject matter of battered spouse syndrome?
I have.
Can you describe your experience in that area for the jury?
I've been asked to do evaluations by the prosecution and defense several times with regards to, and it's come up in different cases, criminal cases, with regards to intimate partner violence.
And does all violent episodes within a relationship result in something that we are describing as battered spouse syndrome?
No.
And I see there is a book in front of you. What book is in front of you?
Yes, so this is the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, and this is the fifth edition text revision, which is the most current edition.
Is battered spouse syndrome in there as a diagnosis?
No, it is not.
And where, if anywhere, does it fit into any of the categories within the DSM-5 TR?
It would come under one of the trauma categories, most specifically under most likely post-traumatic stress disorder.
Can you describe for the jury what post-traumatic stress disorder is?
So this is a disorder that's recognized under the DSM for individuals who have suffered a traumatic event and then they have re-experiencing of the traumatic event. They have different symptoms besides re-experiencing, such as hyperarousal and also avoidance of triggers or symptoms, things that would trigger a response to it.
Are there any agreed upon criteria within the relevant forensic psychiatric and forensic psychological communities about battered spouse syndrome?
There are.
And what would those be?
So it's again, having experienced a trauma repeatedly, violence within an intimate relationship, and then having symptoms secondary to that. Avoidance, so tiptoeing around, trying to avoid recreating the violence.
And if a person experiences an environmental stimuli, something happens to them, another person does or says something to them, is their subjective reaction what is defined as whether there's trauma present or not?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Let me rephrase it.
You can rephrase.
Calls.
You described there's a difference between experiencing a violent relationship and whether or not that person is going to experience trauma from those behaviors they witness and experience. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. Now I've lost my train of thought. Is it fair to say that an experience that a person has, whether or not that person believes it's traumatic, is a subjective experience?
Yes, each individual is different, and so each individual is going to take that experience differently.
Can hypothetically a couple be involved in a violent relationship for a number of years, even 3.5 years, and battered spouse syndrome not necessarily apply to either or both of them?
Yes, that's correct.
Can you explain that?
So again, each individual is different. So one individual may develop the symptoms of battered spouse syndrome and one individual may not under the same exact circumstances, just depending on their makeup and what they've experienced in their background and their biological makeup.
And is there a cycle of violence that is sometimes used to describe battered spouse syndrome?
There is.
Can you describe that?
There is. So there's the initial, there's kind of a tension buildup section where you feel the kind of tension building up and the individual can feel kind of the incident coming. And then there's the actual incident of violence. And then following the incident of violence, there's a honeymoon phase, what they call the honeymoon phase, and that's the third phase where the individual who created the violence attempts to make up to the victim. and recreate kind of the relationship and pull them back in. And then it starts all over again where you feel the kind of tension start building up again to the incidents of violence.
Does abuse have to come in the form of physical or sexual violence?
No.
Can you explain your answer?
So it can also come in ways of coercion. It can come in ways of control, such as financial. So if an individual controls another individual financially or controls their ability to drive or go out, their ability to be around their other family members or friends kind of isolates them from other individuals, controls their ability to work. So controls their ability to make money or access to funds. So they can control them in any number of ways.
Is this kind of about like an inequitable power dynamic in the relationship?
Yes, absolutely.
Can a man be on the receiving end of emotional or physical or sexual trauma and potentially experience, can a man be on the receiving end of verbal, harsh words, physical violence, or sexual violence, and end up having the syndrome of battered spouse syndrome?
Yes, it crosses all boundaries, and we see it in all types of relationships, whether it be heterosexual or homosexual relationships. We see it cross all boundaries.
And can this element of control come from controlling personal items such as identification papers?
Yes, absolutely.
Can control potentially, hypothetically, come from partner A gifting partner B an item, but still considering that item partner A's because he or she paid for it, even though it was a gift?
Yes.
And in this particular case, were you asked to do an evaluation of Sarah Boone?
Yes.
Do you see Ms. Boone in the courtroom today?
I do.
Can you point out where she is and what she's wearing?
She's sitting at a table there wearing a dark suit and a pinkish top.
May the record reflect she's identified the defendant?
Record will so reflect.
What date did you have an evaluation of Ms. Boone?
It was early in October, I believe October 2nd.
And this was at the request of the state of Florida?
Yes, it was.
And subject to a court order?
Yes.
And where? Who was present for this evaluation?
The defense and the prosecution.
All right. Tell us about the evaluation with Ms. Boone. What do you do first?
So I met with Ms. Boone at the jail in a conference room. Again, the prosecution was there and her attorney. I met with her for approximately 2.5 hours, just under 2.5 hours. I introduced myself and explained that the interview would not be confidential, that I would be coming to court if asked to share my opinions. And she agreed to participate. Start out with just general information, so getting to know her, date of birth, kind of background information, who her parents are, childhood. I go through her educational background, her work background, her marital background. I go through health, psychiatric background, any substance use issues. I do a mental status examination.
Can I stop you there?
Yeah.
Elaborate further on that.
So a mental status examination is just questions to determine kind of memory and cognition, kind of how their thought process is, how they're thinking. Are they able to kind of fluidly think through processes?
All right, go on after that.
And then I transitioned from there into walking through the incident that happened with her.
All right, what did she indicate occurred on February 23rd, 2020 to you?
All right, is it all right if I refer to my notes just to make
just if you need them to refresh your memory, please do so, but don't read from them. Just let us know.
So she had a difficult time recalling what time they actually woke up that day. Initially she said in the morning, and then she said she wasn't even sure that it was in the morning. She said that they both wanted to drink. but that she asked that they could clean the house first instead, and that they did some vacuuming and cleaning. They had a half a bottle of wine left over from the day before that they drank. She felt about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they drank that out on the back porch. And she described that they had kind of two beach chairs out there and a dart board, and that they kind of hung out there a lot on the back porch, spent time out there. They did a puzzle out there. And completed that, and then did some kind of artwork. She felt like he was getting frustrated thinking about his life, that he had lost his job. And so she encouraged him to call his daughters. Although she knew that that they did not like to talk to him when he was drinking, so I'm not sure why she had encouraged him to call them at that point, because they were already drinking. And she also at some point encouraged him to call his brother, because she wanted him to explain to his brother that he had pulled her down the stairs the night before, although that didn't happen. He didn't explain that to the brother, and according to her. And then at some point they went and got another bottle of wine and some cigarettes from the grocery store and continued to drink. And then they were inside the house, and then he, I guess, tagged her at some point and said, "Tag, you're it," which indicated that they were gonna play hide and seek. And she said she went upstairs and hid in the shower and waited for him to come, and he never came upstairs. Excuse me. And so she eventually came out of the shower to look for him, and as she was coming down the stairs, she said she saw him slipping into a suitcase, which was on the living room floor, that they had put out because they were going to donate it. And, sorry. And so she went downstairs and indicated that she had found him, and they were kind of laughing, and she zipped the suitcase up, and they continued to laugh, she said, at that point. And they were having a good time and laughing and enjoying themselves and having a good time. And she said, and then she became angry, and she said she remembered what it felt like when he was choking her, and she became angry.
What did she do after she became angry?
I'm gonna refer to my notes at this point.
If you refresh your memory, just
yes.
Put them down and then tell us what you remember.
She said that she shook the suitcase and that she lost control of it and it flipped.
And then what happened?
Then she said that he stuck two fingers out, and her son's baseball bat was sitting there, and she picked the bat up and hit his hand.
Then what happened?
And then she went upstairs and waited for him to come upstairs.
All right. Alcohol. Can you tell us what you know about the effects as a medical doctor of ethanol or alcohol on a human body?
Yes. So it causes intoxication, as we all know, and it causes disinhibition. It works on the frontal lobe of the brain and allows us to do things that we wouldn't normally do. It disinhibits us.
And in the course of your practice, have you ever come across a diagnosis of alcohol abuse disorder?
Yes.
And what is that?
Well, alcohol abuse is an old disorder. So we used to use alcohol dependence and alcohol abuse. It's now been combined in the DSM-5. In the DSM-5 TR, it's alcohol use disorder.
In considering what a patient or a client or somebody that you've been asked to evaluate by a government entity, do you take into account that person who's relaying the history to use a consumption of alcohol at the time of the history that they're given?
Yes.
Why is that?
Because, again, it affects their behavior and their actions.
Does alcohol have any effect on a person's memory?
It can.
What, if any, relationship is there between acute alcohol use or acute alcohol intoxication and battered spouse syndrome?
It can affect your memory, it can affect your reactions, it can affect your response to different things.
Does the disinhibitory nature of alcohol strengthen, weaken, or have no effect on battered spouse syndrome?
It would depend on each individual, again.
Generally speaking, it's important as an evaluator to get as much information as possible before rendering an opinion, such as diagnosing somebody with something out of the DSM-5 TR or battered spouse syndrome.
Yes.
In this particular case, did you require any additional information to reach your conclusion about the relationship between battered spouse syndrome and the events of this evening?
I based my opinion on the information that I had. Certainly, if there was more information, my opinion would be subject to change.
And what was your opinion?
My opinion was that she did not give me enough information to diagnose her with post-traumatic stress disorder at the time that I evaluated her at the jail.
And specifically talking about...
Judge, if we could approach the bench.
Yes. Members of the jury, thank you so much for your patience. I have a matter I have to discuss with counsel outside of y'all's presence. It may take a little bit more time than just our conference up here, and we don't want to have y'all just hanging out waiting for us to figure out what we're going to do next. So I appreciate your patience. We're going to excuse you to the deliberation room at this time. Please do not conduct any independent investigation or research as to the person, places, things, or charge involved, and do not have any conversations amongst yourselves or anyone else about those things, and we'll bring you back in as promptly as possible. Thank you. Y'all can be seated. Thank you. Mr. Rowan, see if you can find me that portion of the transcript that we were addressing as to additional opinions and other depositions and anything in Dr. Warner's deposition that you believe we need to address regarding this opinion as it relates to PTSD.
Well, and Judge, it applied to every opinion she was going to express. It started on page 37. Line 24, as it relates to Sarah Boone, do you have any diagnosis as it relates to her? And then 38 is when she started talking about a generalized anxiety disorder and that she was not for sure whether Sarah Boone had a generalized anxiety disorder versus if it was just an adjustment disorder to being in jail. Mm-hmm. And then she also mentioned in that same answer that Sarah Boone had some narcissistic personality traits and that those were my two major diagnoses. And then I questioned her further about that. She explained again on line 17 about general anxiety disorder versus the adjustment disorder and that I hadn't had time to fully formulate that opinion out. Line 21, I need time to go through my notes and think about it and process it.
Page. We're still on page 38?
38, line 21. I need time to go through my notes, think about it, process it. But I had other depositions, as you're aware, yesterday, so I had to prepare for those and go through that. So I have not had time to process all my notes. And I said on line 39, well, doctor, I'm trying not to inconvenience you. You know, we're set for trial October 7th for jury selection. Line 6, I anticipate your testimony would be until a little later. So we could discontinue the deposition and then reset it when you've got time to review. because obviously I'm not going to want to take your deposition and you have other opinions that are not going to be covered. And then I asked, looks like Mr. J asked, what's your position? He said, conducting discovery after the jury trial starts is completely unacceptable to me. So that's my position. If she needs to issue a supplemental report, or if there has become a need for a second deposition, then we can address that. But it would be my position that we need to get this done because the state doesn't have any appellate rights once jury is sworn and jeopardy attaches. And I say on line 23 of page 39, well, you obviously understand my position. I'd like to finish the deposition today as well. But if she is holding out that she may have other opinions and other diagnosis after she has had more time to think, review the paperwork, then obviously that creates an issue. And then she said, but if that happens, I can bring that forward, and then you can add to your deposition at that point if my opinions change after having reviewed further. And I referred to Mr. J. Page 9 of 40, Mr. J says, I think we plow ahead. This is our time with her. Court reporters prepare to give us a transcript by the end of the week. Something needs to be amended.
End of the weekend.
End of the weekend. If something needs to be amended, then she can A, issue a report. B, if we need to take a deposition, an abbreviated deposition on the limited subject matter she is not prepared to testify about to on today, then we can do that. But the notion of halting a deposition that is set for 3 hours and then doing a 3-hour deposition during trial, especially after jeopardy is attached, is not what the state would do. Then I respond on page 40, line 23. I'm not suggesting that, Mr. J. I'm suggesting what you just said at the very beginning, which is let's finish. But if she has some supplement, then I would want to take a brief second deposition as it relates to any new diagnosis or opinions. Mr. J responds on page on line 4. Okay. What I'm understanding her to say is right now, there has been a previous diagnosis of an adjustment disorder in some of the records, and she just needs to review her records to see if she thinks that is the best diagnosis that she would give as opposed to a generalized anxiety disorder. And then the witness says, you essentially flipped that, Mr. J, upside down. You got that backwards. So we go on to page 42. Line 1, Mr. Owens. I agree. And Dr. Werner, just let the state attorney know.
Okay, but we're skipping a massive portion of 41.
Okay.
That addresses specifically opinions.
All right, let me go back.
As it relates to generalized anxiety disorder.
Okay, the witness starts on line 15. So she's saying she has the generalized anxiety disorder, and I'm saying I want to review it more because Sarah Boone had disclosed to the doctor that she had been previously diagnosed with a generalized anxiety disorder. And so the Dr. Werner was considering that admission, but she was saying I want to review it more to see if I think it's more of an adjustment disorder to being in jail, Judge, to being in the correctional setting right now. And that the stressors that she is under right now as opposed to a generalized anxiety disorder. So Mr. J says on line 22, okay, so on this topic, if something new comes up, then we can address it. But if you have other topics to depose her on, then I suggest we go on. And then page 42, line 1, that's when I say, I agree. And Dr. Werner, just let the state attorney know. I know that you may be, you know, we are on short time. If you do review your notes over the weekend or whatnot and formulate any other opinions, just let the state attorney know and I will address it.
We'll address it.
And we'll address it. Line 7, the witness, Dr. Werner, says absolutely. And then, do you want me to continue reading or...
If there's portions you want to highlight for me, I mean, I have the transcript, I'm following along with you.
That was the general understanding that we had about all diagnoses, all opinions that she may have. And so she starts talking about the mental status exam that she gave her, and then she... Page 43, line A, she has narcissistic personality disorder traits. Or I asked that question, no? That's how she answered. goes through a little bit of that. And then, she, paraphrasing, she talks about the grandiose component or criteria that she met. And then on page 45, I asked her what other criteria, line one, would tend to indicate that she was a narcissist. And the answer by Dr. Werner, I didn't say that she was. I said that she has narcissistic traits. And that was the examples.
Excuse me for interrupting, but can we lasso this back in?
I understand that's what the depo reflects, but the non-objection which led to objection pertains to an opinion specifically about post-traumatic stress disorder. At this time, no opinion is being referenced, nor does the call of the question pertain to narcissistic personality traits or diagnosis of narcissism. The question pertains to PTSD.
All right, page 46, line one, question, okay. Do you feel like she suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder? Line three, answer. She didn't give me criteria with regards to that. She discussed having fear and anxiety of his family and fear that they would come into the jail or have someone else come into the jail and harm her. She talked about that. And she spoke about, you know, having recollections, remembering abuse from George during the evaluation. Question 13, 136. But you don't believe that she suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder, in your opinion? Answer, line 15, no. I would have to look through, back through my notes, to see if she fully met the criteria. Question, line 17. Can you explain why you don't think she suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder? Answer, line 19. No, I didn't say one way or the other. I would have to look back through my notes for that. Line 21, question. Is that something that you may, in the future, give an opinion about after some time reflecting and reviewing your notes? Line 24, answer, I may. Number 25, question, okay, and that's something you will let the lawyers know about if that changes. Answer, line 2 of page 47, yes. That's specific to the post-traumatic stress disorder.
Okay.
So at the time of this deposition, when I asked her specifically...
So what's the legal objection? What are the legal grounds of the objection?
I would not take that deposition, Judge. When she said, I have not had time sufficiently to answer these questions, these diagnoses, these opinions, if this wasn't set for a definitive date that you had already told me it's not going to be continued, I would refuse to take that deposition. But under the promises from the state,
What are the legal grounds of your objection? I'm familiar with the background. I'm familiar with the time frame. I'm familiar with all the dates and the depots and the coordination and everything we had to do to get this all teed up before trial. What are the legal grounds of your objection? I understand the backdrop.
I don't know if there's a legal ground other than we had an agreement as attorneys, as parties, that I would be notified of a change of opinion and I would be allowed to take a second deposition. That's the only thing I know to object to.
Okay.
Because I was not given that opportunity, which was an agreement between the parties.
Response.
Judge, I don't appreciate the implications that they're making. What I would proffer with this witness is, we spoke yesterday. I asked her if she had any change in her opinion about any of the diagnoses. She said no. And I asked, well then, my position, my understanding of her position is that it doesn't matter whether she had PTSD or not, because what Ms. Boone said at the time was that she zipped Mr. Torres up into the suitcase
They were both laughing, and once he was already secured in the suitcase, she became angry and then did all the things that she did. My expected answers from the doctor based on a very brief conversation yesterday and this morning was that if I asked her whether or not PTSD or BSS had anything to do with this particular case, that her answer would be, it doesn't matter because of what she stated happened. I'm not asking her about her diagnosis of PTSD. I'm not going to be going into narcissism. I'm not going to go into whether or not she ever delineated the difference between adjustment disorder or anxiety, because my understanding of what she told me was that none of this matters. None of this matters because of what she said to us during the evaluation.
But the question was, and I may have to ask Madam Court Reporter to read it back, but my memory of what the question was is, have you formulated an opinion with regard to PTSD?
And my expected answer was, it doesn't matter because of what she said during the evaluation.
Okay. Unfortunately, that was not the answer that came from the witness. The answer was definitive no.
Attorney's fault.
I'm not casting blame. I'm just going back over of what was asked and what was said. Okay.
Yes.
Judge, and that's his position, that post-traumatic stress disorder that doesn't apply in this case, and that he, I'm sure, reflected his opinion to the expert. But that doesn't mean that that's my opinion, that post-traumatic stress does not apply.
Yeah, that's irrelevant for the purposes of this argument.
Well, their discussions and him feeling like it didn't apply.
Okay, as an officer of the court, he just told me he spoke to the expert yesterday and the opinions hadn't changed. And the opinion that was offered at the deposition was, I'm not sure. And based on what he had proffered as to what he expected the answer to be, the answer was not, it was not going to be any different. It's not applicable. It doesn't matter because of what she told me. That's unfortunately not the answer that was given. So what is it that you're asking me to do at this time, Mr. Owens?
I'm asking, I don't know if we need to proffer the entire testimony of this witness because opinions and diagnoses have apparently changed. I think I have a right to take a second deposition before she testifies.
What other opinions, Mr. J, if any, are going to be offered by Dr. Warner?
May I just proffer?
Yes.
All right, you've been present for all this hearing, yes, Doctor?
Yes.
Am I misrepresenting any of our conversations?
No.
All right. And so if I ask you if battered spouse syndrome or PTSD has any relationship to the facts of the case as the defendant relayed them to you, what would be your answer?
That it's not related to the incident as she reported it.
Okay. And if I ask you, therefore, if there were any prior instances of violence, would that change your opinion? What would your answer be?
No.
And if you reviewed any other materials, would that change your opinion based on what she told you about what happened that evening?
No.
That's it.
Judge, number one, she's given a legal opinion. Number two, it's a discovery violation.
What is the legal opinion?
That post-traumatic stress disorder doesn't apply in this case.
Dr. Harper testified it did, and that's what experts do.
I would like to have known that, and that was going to be her opinion before today.
That's not a change in testimony.
Where is that a change in the deposition?
You're going to have to read the whole transcript.
No. This is a 87-page transcript. You're objecting. You have the burden to establish your objection.
Give me a minute. I'll read through it and find where I asked her.
I mean, this isn't the first time I've looked at this deposition. The state provided it to me when we had the hearing on whether or not battered spouse would be permitted. And the state provided specific highlights for me to look at. At no point in time did the defense say, look at this, look at this, look at this, in her deposition when we had that hearing. So other than what's being provided to me right now and what's been testified to this morning, I don't know what opinions she has. All I know in coming into today is what the basis of her opinion was specifically with regard to any of the statements that Ms. Boone had provided, which was the whole crux of the state's motion to prevent battered spouse from coming into evidence?
Judge, if you look at page 66, line 20, let me know when you're there, Judge.
Hang on. Yes, sir.
Page 66, line 20, question. Okay, so other than the couple of hours that you intend to maybe reflect on your notes and anything else, any other work that you intend to do on this case? Answer, 23, no, sir. Not that I'm aware. Line 24, question. And you've expressed all your opinions, at least generally, here today. Answer, page 67, line 1, yes, sir. Question. Then I go into fees. Then on 67, line 7, question. Just double dog sure. You admit that you have no other opinions other than the ones you've expressed here today. Line 10, answer. That I've been asked about. If I'm asked something else, that I'll offer it. Number 12, question. And you've been provided all the resources you need to rely on and express your opinions. Line 14, answer. I have based an opinion on the resources that I've been provided. If there's other things out there to be provided that may or may not change my opinion. I believe it's a discovery violation because I should have been notified that there was going to be a change in opinions here today. And we had an agreement that I was going to be allowed to retake the deposition and not be ambushed in the middle of the trial with a new opinion.
What new opinions are different based on what Mr. J proffered the testimony is going to be?
I have to ask Madam Clerk to reread the question and the answer from the expert. It's been so long now.
Madam Clerk, or Madam Court Reporter, are you able to reread the portion of the proffer as to what Mr. J asked of the witness? Absolutely. Of course. Court's going to step off for a moment while Madam Court Reporter is able to provide that reading. All right, we're back on the record. Case number 2020-CF-2603, State of Florida versus Sarah Boone. State.
Dave Kestor on behalf of the state.
William J. for the state.
Defense.
James Owens for Ms. Boone.
Kevin Beck on behalf of Ms. Boone.
Ms. Boone is seated at counsel's table wearing the same clothing from this morning. Madam Court Reporter, have you had the opportunity to review the transcript as to the proffer of Dr. Werner's testimony?
Yes.
Okay, you may proceed.
By Mr. J, question. You've been present for all of this hearing. Yes, doctor? Answer, yes. Question. Am I misrepresenting any of our conversations? Answer, no. Question? All right, so if I ask you if battered spouse syndrome or PTSD has any relationship to the facts of this case as the defendant relayed them to you, what would be your answer? Question? That it's not related to the incident as she reported it. Question? Okay. And if I ask you, therefore, if there are any prior instances instances of violence, would that change your opinion? What would your answer be? Answer, no. Question, if you reviewed any other materials or materials, would that change your opinion based on what she told you about what happened that evening? Answer, no. Question, all right, that's it.
I don't think that's the very beginning before I objected.
What was asked was to read back the proffer.
I thought I was asking to go back to the very beginning when the question was asked and then her response and my objection to it.
What was specifically asked was to the proffer, because the question before the court was whether the proffered opinions are at odds with what was testified to during the course of the deposition. There's the question that was asked, and the answer that was given affirmatively provided an opinion as to PTSD. I think Mr. Jay admits that. Mr. Jay has advised the court that's not what he was hoping the answer would be. That the answer was supposed to be something different, as identified in the proffer, which is why I had Madam Court Reporter read back the proffer. So the question Mr. Owens posed to you is whether the proffered opinions that Madam Court Reporter just read back to us are different than what was provided in the deposition.
Yes.
How so?
She tended to explain in the proffer some legal reason why it did not apply in her opinion. That was not discussed in any way in the deposition.
Okay, my question is specific as to opinions. Her opinions were as to battered spouse syndrome or post-traumatic stress disorder and their relationship to the case based on the defendant's responses. The answer is not related to the incident as the defendant reported. Those are the opinions, as I understand them based on the proffer, as it relates to battered spouse syndrome and post-traumatic stress disorder.
I think I'd refer to page 46, line 13 was the question, but you don't believe that she suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder in your opinion. Line 15, the answer is no. I would have to look through, back through my notes to see if she fully met that criteria. Question 17, can you explain why you don't think she suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder? Line 19, answer no. I didn't say one way or the other. I would have to look back through my notes for that. Question number 21, is that something that you may, in the future, give an opinion about after some time reflecting and reviewing your notes? 24, I may. 25, okay, and that's something you will let the lawyers know about if that changes. That's on page 47. Line 2, yes. That's fundamentally, substantially, materially different from what she's testified as it relates to post-traumatic stress as it applies in this case.
In the proffer?
Excuse me?
In the proffer? She's not rendering an, unless I misunderstood the proffer, she's not rendering an opinion on PTSD and whether or not Ms. Boone suffers from it.
Well, she led me to believe that she was trying to decide whether or not Sarah Boone suffered from post-traumatic stress. Now in the proffer, they're claiming that post-traumatic stress does not apply. I don't know what the initial question was. We haven't had that read back when it was first going on, when a question was asked, and I believe she rendered an opinion. And I like that to be reread back. What the initial question was, what the response was, because it did. I know I objected. I can't even remember it now. But I know I objected because I knew it was inconsistent with
you asked to approach. And then you explained that the question was it was not something that was framed in the deposition. Multiple times I asked you for a legal objection. And it wasn't until right before or right after we sent the jury out that you provided some legal objection. You know, if you want Madam Court Reporter to go back and read the question that led us to where we are right now and the answer, I'm totally on board with that. I have a memory of what it was, but nothing like...
Before she does that, can I get the first question of the proffer, if BSS or PTSD has any... Can you reread that?
Let's just reread the entire proffer, just so that it's a clear, soup to nuts, alpha to the omega, what the proffer was. Madam Court Reporter, if you could be so kind. Yes, ma'am.
By Mr. J, question. You've been present for all of this hearing. Yes, doctor. Answer, yes. Question, am I misrepresenting any of our conversations? Answer, no. Question, all right, so if I ask you if battered spouse syndrome or PTSD has any relationship to the facts of this case as the defendant relayed them to you, what would be your answer? Answer, that it's not related to the incident as she reported it. Question, okay, and if I ask you, therefore, if there are any prior instances of violence, would that change your opinion? What would your answer be? Answer, no. And question, and if you reviewed any other materials or materials, would that change your opinion based on what she told you about what happened that evening? Answer, no. Question, all right, that's it.
And then if she could go back to the initial.
More continuing coverage in the suitcase murder. The trial of Sarah Boone is on the way from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Press subscribe now.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.